Evolutionary Psychology, Part 1, The Science of Human Nature, Lecture 7, Cooperation and the Paradox of Altruism.
Darwin first identified the paradox of social behavior in his chapter on instincts in The Origin of Species. He pointed out that selection at the level of individuals could not explain the origin of social behavior, especially among social insects. Although Darwin did not use the term, the problem he needed to explain was the evolution of altruism, that is, doing something that benefits someone else at what appears to be some cost to oneself. Darwin's theory of evolution is based on the assumption that natural selection takes place at the level of individuals. According to his theory, the heritable characteristics of individuals that survive and reproduce more often than others become more common over time. That is, those characteristics become what we refer to as adaptations because of selection at the level of individuals. Darwin realized that the evolution of the kind of cooperation that exists among social insects, things like ants, bees, termites, and wasps, could not possibly evolve by natural selection at the level of individuals. The reason for this is that the members of the worker and warrior castes of most of the species of social insects are sterile. They do not reproduce, and therefore cannot possibly pass on their anatomical, physiological, or behavioral characteristics to their offspring. Instead, they assist one, or in some species a small number, of their siblings to reproduce, usually producing many more offspring than any single individual could successfully produce alone. Sterile workers in ant colonies, beehives, termite mounds, and wasp nests also sacrifice their lives in defense of the group. This behavior appears to be a very extreme form of altruism, especially when viewed from the standpoint of natural selection at the level of individuals. Darwin's solution to this dilemma was surprisingly simple. He pointed out that animal breeders do the same thing when they breed cattle, sheep, and pigs for meat. When cattle, sheep, or pigs are slaughtered for meat, they're usually killed while still very young, typically before reaching reproductive age. In most cases, male cattle, sheep, or pigs are castrated, that is, sterilized, soon after birth, a treatment that makes them grow larger, taste better, and behave less aggressively. To obtain more cattle, sheep, or pigs for meat, close relatives, parents or full siblings, of the slaughtered animals are bred and their offspring castrated and slaughtered for meat. Because the close relatives of the slaughtered animals have very similar characteristics to the ones that are bred, the characteristics of the slaughtered animals persist and can even be modified by natural selection, even though most of them never reproduce. Darwin considered this to be selection at the level of the family, rather than at the level of the individual. His use of the term family, rather than group, was not accidental. In the sense that Darwin used it, family meant a group of closely related individuals, presumably sharing a closely related set of heritable characteristics. Later, and especially in his book, The Descent of Man and Selection in Relation to Sex, Darwin extended this idea to selection at the level of groups, especially groups of humans. In several chapters of The Descent of Man, Darwin described groups of humans, which he usually referred to as tribes, competing with each other in various ways, including wars. He proposed that a group composed of cooperative, that is, altruistic, people would usually succeed more often than groups composed of purely selfish individuals, especially when such groups were in competition or at war with each other. Although he didn't formally propose the term, Darwin was describing what has since been called group selection. That is, natural selection at the level of the group rather than the individual. In the decades following the publication of The Origin of Species, the concept of group selection came to be the standard explanation for the evolution of cooperative behavior. the idea that natural selection acted at the level of the entire insect colony, rather than at the level of its individual members, was explicit in Darwin's discussion of social insects. As a result, most biologists simply accepted the idea that group selection was not only possible, but was the explanation for the evolution of insect sociality and perhaps social behavior of all kinds. And consequently, no systematic attempt was made to explore or extend or test this idea until the 1960s. In 1962, Vero C. Wynne Edwards, an eminent Scottish ecologist and zoologist whose specialty was the behavioral ecology of seabirds, published a monumental book entitled Animal Dispersion in Relation to Social Behavior. The book was immediately popular with ethologists around the world, both for its encyclopedic coverage of animal social behavior, the first and largest such compendium on the subject, and the theory of group selection that Wynne Edwards proposed as the basis for much of this behavior. Wynne Edwards proposed that many different forms of social behavior, from courtship and mating displays to territoriality to dominance hierarchies, all had one underlying function: to restrict the full reproductive potential of the members of social groups of animals. He based this assertion on the observation that such behaviors do indeed have the effect of lowering the average reproductive output of the members of a social group of animals, considered as a unit. This is because, as a result of such behaviors, some individuals do not have as many offspring as they could, and a sizable number do not have any offspring at all. That is, those who can't successfully attract a mate, defend a territory, or rise to a dominant position in a hierarchy. Wynne Edwards' argument was that such social behaviors were therefore adaptive at the level of groups, because, as a result of restricting their reproduction, such groups did not exhaust the resources available to them, thereby limiting damage to their ecosystems and, as a result, avoiding eventual extinction. In other words, groups composed of individuals that restricted their reproductive output in the long run survived and reproduced more often than groups composed of individuals that maximized their reproduction. In 1966, George C. Williams, in an extraordinarily influential book entitled Adaptation and Natural Selection, A Critique of Some Current Evolutionary Thought, directly attacked Wynne Edwards' theory, and by extension, all theories of group selection. Using logical arguments backed up with only a few well-chosen examples, Williams showed that each of Wynne Edwards' group selection explanations could be replaced by a parallel explanation at the level of individual selection. In particular, Williams pointed out that any population of animals composed of individuals that restricted their reproduction could be invaded by a selfish individual that maximized their reproduction. This problem, the idea that selfishness inevitably trumps altruism, became a paradox as difficult to solve and as potentially fatal as Darwin's paradox of the evolution of sterile castes by natural selection. Here's how such an invasion works. Imagine a population, say a population of crows in a woodlot. There's only enough food to support a finite number of crows. If they're more than that, some of them will starve. Now, imagine that all of the crows restrict their reproductive output with the result that their population remains in balance with their food supply. Well, this is Wynne Edwards' argument, that reproductive restraint via complex social behavior evolves in order to keep populations in balance with their environmental resources. But now, imagine that a crow comes along, or perhaps mutates within the population. It does not restrict its reproductive output. It has as many baby crows as it possibly can. If this tendency to maximize the number of baby crows is inherited by this individual's offspring, what kind of crows will there be in this population after not too many generations? The answer should be obvious. Crows that maximize the number of offspring, regardless of its effects on the survivability of the group. This means that no matter how often group selection might reduce the reproductive outputs of the member of a group, they remain permanently susceptible to invasion and replacement by individuals who do not conform to the behavior that results in the group adaptation. Group selection, therefore, appears to be inherently unstable and consequently should always be replaced by individuals whose characteristics have been shaped by individual selection alone. But the living world is filled with amazing examples of cooperation and altruism. For example, worker honeybees will attack anything they perceive to be threatening their hive, despite the fact that such an attack is almost invariably fatal to the defending worker. The paradox here is plain. Either the worker's suicide somehow results in the production of more workers like herself. Remember, all the workers are female. Or her behavior is not the result of an evolved tendency. An extremely unlikely possibility is worker bees will attack a potential enemy without ever having had a chance to learn to do so. And so their behavior is clearly innate. Williams himself had mentioned a solution to this paradox existed, but most evolutionary biologists were unfamiliar with it at the time. That solution, which was eventually to lead to the formulation of an entirely new branch of biology, had been suggested only 2 years earlier by William D. Hamilton, a newly minted graduate student in evolutionary biology at Cambridge University. William D. Hamilton has often been called the Darwin of the 20th century. In one way, this comparison is apt, as Hamilton is credited with founding a huge and growing discipline within the biological sciences. In another way, however, it is not, as Hamilton was almost completely unknown at the time of the publication of his most important work, and is still not generally well known outside of the field of evolutionary biology. Hamilton's most important contribution to evolutionary biology was the formulation of what is now known as Hamilton's rule. Here it is, that altruism can evolve, that is, altruism is selected for, when the cost of an altruistic act is less than the benefit to its recipient multiplied by the degree to which the altruist is related to the recipient. In other words, altruism can evolve by natural selection as long as the altruists are closely related to each other and their altruistic actions benefit their kin. Stated another way, the probability of altruism evolving in a population increases directly with genetic relatedness. In brief, genetic relatedness increases the benefits and decreases the cost of altruism. Because it ties the evolution of cooperation to genetic relatedness, Hamilton's rule is often referred to as kin selection. Stated again, altruism can evolve by natural selection if it benefits closely related kin. Notice that kin selection can be explained under Darwin's theory of selection at the level of families, which he proposed as a solution to the problem of the evolution of sterile castes in social insects. Hamilton's theory of kin selection is strongly supported by observations of social insects, as Hamilton himself recognized. Societies in which there is one or more sterile caste, that is, workers, warriors, queens, drones, and so forth, and extraordinarily high degrees of cooperation, that is, altruism, are referred to as eusocial societies. Hamilton pointed out that eusociality has evolved independently in nature several times, presumably meaning that the same mechanisms contributed to its evolution in each case. Hamilton also pointed out that nearly all of these independently evolved lines of eusocial animals are found in one order, the order Hymenoptera of the class Insecta. The order Hymenoptera includes ants, bees, and wasps, many of which are highly eusocial, plus other species that are nearly solitary. Regardless of their degree of sociality, all species of Hymenoptera have one thing in common. They all use a peculiar genetic system to determine sex. In this system, called haplodiploidy, females develop from fertilized eggs, that is, eggs that contain genes from both the mother and the father, while males develop from unfertilized eggs, that is, eggs containing genes only from the mother. This means that female ants, bees, and wasps are related to their siblings, their sisters, by an average of 3/4, while they're related to their own offspring by only 1/2. Therefore, a female ant, bee, or wasp who helps her sister, the queen, produce offspring will, on the average, cause more copies of her genes to be passed to the next generation than a female who produces her own offspring. Haplodiploidy, therefore, predisposes the Hymenoptera towards the evolution of eusociality, but does not absolutely require it. Notice that according to Hamilton's rule, natural selection happens at the level of genes rather than at the level of individuals. This means that according to Hamilton's rule, altruism does not exist at the level of genes. This is because an animal that performs an apparently altruistic act that causes the frequency of its genes to increase in the next generation by promoting the reproduction of close kin is acting purely selfishly on behalf of its genes. Another way of looking at this is to consider that an organism is simply a gene's way of making more genes. From this perspective, it doesn't really matter if the organism survives and reproduces, if the genes that produce that organisms do so. In somebody else or in yourself or in your own offspring, it doesn't matter. This is why Richard Dawkins, another of the founders of sociobiology, refers to selfish genes as the explanation for the evolution of altruism and cooperation. The genes are selfish. The organisms that the genes produce are altruistic and cooperative. But what about apparently altruistic behaviors that do not appear to benefit the altruist's close kin? Do they exist? And if so, how can they be explained? Well, the answer to the first question is clearly yes. There are numerous examples of seemingly altruistic behaviors that do not appear to benefit the close genetic kin of the animal performing them. One example is alarm calls among mixed species of foraging birds. Like the alarm calls of prairie dogs, these are given when a predator is spotted. However, because such flocks often consist of several species, it is unlikely that the bird giving the warning is closely related to all of them. Another example is the widespread phenomenon of cleaners that rid other animals of parasites. On tropical reefs, there are species of fish and shrimp that have specialized in removing parasites from the scales and even the lining of the inside of the mouth of other fish. The fish that they're cleaning generally do not eat the cleaners, and the cleaners do not nibble on their hosts, despite numerous opportunities for both to do so. In an even more extreme example, there are acacia trees in subtropical Africa that provide ants with both food and hollow thorns as nesting spaces. In return, the ants aggressively repel animals that attempt to graze on the leaves or branches of the acacias. Both partners in this mutualistic symbiosis benefit from such behavior. But the question remains, how can such apparent altruism evolve between members of different species, and in this case, different kingdoms? The answer to this paradox was suggested by Robert L. Trivers, another of the founders of the science of sociobiology, and sometimes referred to as the Einstein of sociobiology. In 1971, Trivers published a paper on the evolution of reciprocal altruism, that is, altruism that evolves as the result of reciprocated acts of mutual benefit. According to Trivers' theory, reciprocally altruistic exchanges must be repeated with no definite endpoint. That is, it generally requires long-lived individuals that live in the same place. Such exchanges must involve only small units of value per exchange, so that neither player is tempted to cheat. The individuals involved must be able to unambiguously identify each other as individuals and remember what exchanges have occurred and what units of value have been involved and whether or not a past player of the game is a cheater. Cheaters must be identified and punished for cheating at a level of retribution that exceeds the benefit derived from cheating. Notice several important implications of Trivers' theory. For reciprocal altruism to evolve does not require either love or even trust on the part of either player. It only requires that the exchanges be repeated indefinitely. The longer the players interact with each other, the greater the potential cumulative benefit from reciprocally altruistic exchanges. Trivers' requirements strongly imply that animals that are long-lived can identify each other as individuals, have a good memory, and can predict the behavior of other animals with fairly high accuracy, are most likely to evolve cooperation as the result of reciprocal altruism. And of course, these conditions fit humans better than almost any other animals. In 1981, William D. Hamilton, the inventor of the theory of kin selection, co-authored a paper with Robert Axelrod in which they refined and extended Trivers' theory of reciprocal altruism. Axelrod and Hamilton hosted a computer tournament in which they invited scientists from around the world to submit computer programs to solve a mathematical paradox called the Prisoner's Dilemma. The Prisoner's Dilemma is a mathematical game in which two prisoners are given the choice to either keep silent or squeal on the other prisoner. Because of the way these two choices are rewarded or punished, both prisoners rationally choose to squeal on the other prisoner, despite the fact that they would both go free if they both kept silent. Programs were submitted from all over the world, some of them very elaborate. Axelrod and Hamilton pitted the programs against each other in a tournament in which the house strategy was complete selfishness, that is, no cooperation in any round of the game. Importantly, the games were repeated, that is, these were what are known as iterated prisoner's dilemmas, because complete selfishness always wins if the game is only played once. The result of the tournament was extremely striking. The winner was also the simplest program submitted, consisting of only 4 lines of code in the computer language BASIC. The winning program, submitted by mathematical game theorist Anatole Rapoport, was called Tit for Tat and had the following rules. On the first round of the game, cooperate with the opposing player. On the second round of the game, do exactly what the opposing player did in response to the initial cooperative move. If the opposing player is selfish, a strategy technically referred to as defection, tit for tat immediately retaliates by defecting as well. However, if the opposing player cooperates, tit for tat responds by cooperating. If the opposing player first defects but then cooperates later, tit for tat does not punish it for past behavior, but simply cooperates as long as its opponent does so. Notice several characteristics of tit for tat that contributed to its success in the tournament. It's nice. That is, it starts off by cooperating on its first round. It's also retaliatory, immediately punishing an opponent for defection. It's also forgiving, immediately rewarding a defector for cooperating. It's simple. Indeed, it was the simplest program submitted to the tournament. And finally, it's robust. It consistently won repeated rounds of the game and versions of the tournament and is still the reigning champion 2 decades and many tournaments later. After publishing their findings in Science magazine, Axelrod and Hamilton went on to expand on their discoveries in a landmark book, The Evolution of Cooperation, published in 1984. In it, they applied the basic principles of tit-for-tat to the evolution of cooperation in many different species, including humans. They pointed out what Trivers had mentioned earlier, that the evolution of cooperation doesn't require either love or trust. All that is necessary for cooperation to evolve between two players is duration of relationship. The game must be repeated, with no identifiable endpoint. They also pointed out that this means that symbioses in which two or more unrelated groups of organisms live in constant, intimate contact with each other are most likely to evolve the kinds of cooperative strategies exemplified by tit-for-tat. The converse of this finding is that short-term, and especially single-time exchanges, are much more likely to result in pure selfishness. Does the apparent success of tit-for-tat and its implications for Trivers' theory of reciprocal altruism mean that genuine altruism, that is, altruism which there is no attempt at reciprocation, and therefore no benefit to the altruist, impossible? Not necessarily. An entirely new mathematical theory for the evolution of altruism via genuine group selection was proposed in the early 1970s by George R. Price. Central to Price's new analysis was what has come to be known as the Price equation, a mathematical formula that ties the fate of a specific gene to its effects on a population of individuals that have that gene. Using a mathematical concept called covariance, Price showed that changes in the frequency of a gene in a population were tied to the expression of that gene among the descendants of individuals possessing it. Price also showed that the ultimate evolutionary effect of any given gene could best be measured by determining its effects on populations of individuals with the gene, compared with other populations in which different genes were present. George R. Price had no formal training in either evolutionary biology or mathematical population genetics, but he was an extraordinarily talented amateur whose unorthodox approach to the problem of the simultaneous evolution of related traits has revolutionized evolutionary theory. While studying evolutionary biology on his own, Price happened to read William D. Hamilton's 1964 paper on the evolution of altruism via kin selection. Price wrote to Hamilton with his own analysis of the idea, but Hamilton was on a 9-month research trip to Brazil. While Hamilton was gone, Price worked on his own mathematical analysis of the problem of the evolution of altruism by natural selection. And while Hamilton was still in Brazil, Price sent him a manuscript containing his mathematical analysis of the problem, which he described as having a more transparent, though less rigorous, derivation and formulation of the main result of his paper. What Price sent to Hamilton, and which Hamilton read first with some consternation, and then later with growing admiration, was an entirely new way of mathematically analyzing the effects of natural selection. Price showed that changes in the frequency of a gene in a population were tied to the expression of that gene among descendants of individuals possessing it. Price also showed that Hamilton's concept of kin selection was subsumed by his equation. In a small population, individuals can be negatively related as well as positively related. That is, an individual can share fewer genes with certain other individuals, especially non-group members, than with their group as a whole. Price showed mathematically that this means that such individuals can benefit their group, and therefore those individuals to whom they are more closely genetically related, by lowering the fitness of individuals to whom they are not closely related. Spite, in other words, harming another individual at some cost of oneself, can be positively selected if one's closer relations benefit from such spite. Another striking implication of Price's model is that while it can incorporate kin selection, it doesn't require it for altruism to evolve. This is because the actions of altruists in a group can have positive effects on the average fitness of the entire group, even if they're not closely related to the members of the group. Selection, in other words, can operate at the level of groups as well as individuals, causing the frequency of altruistic genes to increase compared with its frequency in other groups, even when such genes decrease in relative frequency within the groups that benefit from their presence. Hamilton was initially skeptical, but eventually revised his own theory of kin selection to incorporate Price's insights. In 1975, Hamilton published a paper on innate social aptitudes of man in which he argued for what has come now to be called multi-level selection, that is, simultaneous natural selection at the level of genes, that is, kin selection, at the level of individuals, classic Darwinian selection, and at the level of groups, group selection. Hamilton's analysis was essentially a concession that group selection was not only possible, it also amplified the effects of individual and kin selection. Hamilton admitted this to Price, saying that through a group selection of extension of his formula for kin selection, he now had a far better understanding of group selection and was possessed of a far better tool for all forms of selection acting at one level or at many than ever before. In 1998, Elliot Sober and David Sloan Wilson published Unto Others, The Evolution and Psychology of Unselfish Behavior, in which they argue for the importance of multi-level selection, especially as an explanation for the evolution of cooperation. Sober and Wilson began by analyzing the various theories that have been presented for the evolution of cooperation, beginning with Darwin and ending with Price. In particular, they pointed out that the Price equation and related mathematical analyses provide a strong foundation for a new theory of group selection, one that explains the evolution of cooperation at all levels, genes, individuals, and groups. They also propose that this idea, which they call multi-level selection, provides an empirically testable model for the evolution of cooperation and provides experimental results to support it. We have now briefly outlined almost all of the underlying conceptual foundations of evolutionary psychology. Just one more impolite topic remains: the evolution of sex and mating. It might seem that at least in the process of reproduction, cooperation between potential mates would be unproblematic compared with cooperation between unrelated individuals or groups. But, as we will see in the next lecture, the evolutionary foundations of sex and mating present nearly as many paradoxes as the evolution of altruism and cooperation. And, once we've analyzed the evolutionary dynamics of sex and mating, we may come to realize that when it comes to the birds and the bees, not only are the bees doing something peculiar, so are the birds, and so are we.
This ends Lecture 7.